What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL. Joined as always by my main men, Jonathan Holder and Toby D. What's going on, guys?
Oh man, living the life, baby. It's Tuesday. Cuts have been made and it's time to get ready for the season.
That's right. And for you very observant people, you notice that there's another face down in the bottom corner. We are joined by Joe Patrick of 92.9. He's an Atlanta Falcons beat reporter. We very much appreciate you joining us today. Mr. Patrick, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing even better than I'm able to come on the show, a show that I've watched and listened to plenty of times. So it's always fun, and what a better day to do it than on a big news day where we have a lot to talk about and chop it up.
That much we do. There is no doubt that we have a ton to get into today, so we're not going to spend too much time with the preamble and chatter, so we might as well just go ahead and get into it. Now, I know some of y'all may not actually want to talk about it. You might just want to jump right into the cuts. But on Thursday of last week, since the last time we talked, there was a scrimmage played. I hate to call it a game because I don't know if it was necessarily a game. But nonetheless, there was a scrimmage played. We did have Falcons in full dress uniform, going full speed on a football field in Mercedes-Benz against another team. So if that classifies as a game, then we will go ahead and call it. So I can't help it, man. That look.
It was rough watching that. Being in the building, it was rough. Like, it would have been rough watching it on my couch, but actually driving up there with you, waiting in line, dealing with the crowd that was in there, all that.
Those are all your friends, Jonathan.
And yes, all those fans are my friends.
They were all your friends.
Man.
Folks, if y'all, like the folks that are in chat, if y'all could have seen it, John was getting salty with the Steelers faithful that had come out. And I knew, look, a lot of y'all know I drive for a living. Right. So I'm all over Georgia, top, bottom, everywhere. And if y'all would be amazing, I see a ton of Pittsburgh Steelers logos on people's cars, like all over the state. So I knew, I knew that there was going to be a big turnout because they don't get to see their team. Right.
Yeah.
And ratio wise, it had to have been like 52% Steelers fans. Out of like all, it was definitely more Steelers fans in the building than Falcons fans, which I pretty much thought was going to be the case. And their terrible towels were swinging, which I thought was hilarious. but yeah, when I saw TJ Watt step on the field and I knew we had absolutely zero starters out there, I felt bad for Tyler Heinicke. I felt bad for whoever else was going to line up that out there because it was bad. It looked ugly. And there isn't really a ton to say about it.
Yep.
Other than we still would be remiss if we didn't do the ballers and fallers. Everybody's favorite segment. So without much further ado, I always got to remember to remove the banner because it covers up Toby.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, I know you say you're good, but people want to see you, Toby. You are a fan favorite, sir.
Man, I'm good. Thank you, though.
So we're going to start with our baller, and I think it's a guy who absolutely deserves it throughout for his whole play throughout the preseason and in this particular game, and that was DeMarco Helms. He seemed to be all over the field, made like four tackles with another three assisted tackles. He's been a pleasure to watch this preseason. Joe, like we have everybody else's opinions on DeMarco. So what's your thoughts on DeMarco and his play in this particular game?
He's just one of those guys who, you know, by the end of training camp, leaving him off the roster was just it was undeniable. Like he forced his way onto the roster. Like he was probably one of the players on this roster now that the cuts have been made that was probably not on it, probably by the coaches, marks and lots of fans, obviously, before training camp. And then, it was just undeniable, almost an automatic, like he's on the roster. And he just seems to be playing free out there, just like loose, aggressive, you know, ball hawking kind of guy, which is so nice to see from a Falcons safety, where that's been, you know, that secondary has been a trouble spot here for a couple years now, at least. So it's been really nice to see a player really develop over the course of the training camp. And I think that's what's been, you know, so gratifying to watch out of Helms.
Yeah, he's definitely been a joy. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, I was going to say what's been surprising. It wasn't surprising to me with like some of the big hits, because that's what you hear about him coming out of college. I mean, that's why he got the name, you know, Hitman Helms. You know, the guy knows how to bring it, right? But I guess what's been kind of surprising to me, pleasantly surprising, has been his coverage skills. He's been much better than I thought he was going to be, at least year one.
Right.
So we'll see if he can continue that, if he, you know, if he makes his way onto the field at some point this season, which, you know, with only four safeties, you're probably going to see him at some point. So let's see if he can continue that when he's playing against the ones. But yeah, seeing his coverage has been probably the biggest surprise out of him this whole preseason.
Right. Toby, you got anything you want to add there?
I can't wait to see how he does when he plays against the number one QBs that will be starting this season. I mean, he played well, man. And, you know, but now I just want to see how well that translates when the game goes even faster and there's a game plan in place and he's actually facing some of these top guys, which when you look at the schedule, they don't have a lot of top guys that they're going to have to face this year. So that's a good thing. But I just want to see how he's going to do when it now is where it really counts. And, but I do believe in the guy, man. I think he had a great preseason, great camp leading up to this point. So I'm excited to see what he does. If he can get on the field and push Jalen Hawkins for some time.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So I'm interested in seeing how that's going to work.
Willie Doc, I did beat you too. Willie. He said, you beat me to it, JR. Ballers is all the fans that endured the Steelers game. I completely agree. That should have been anybody who was there past halftime. Y'all are all saints. Yes. Ballers is Jalen Mayfield. And then we better win the first game. Jalen Mayfield is somebody we will get into and talk about. But the second part of that statement, you know, we better win the first game, does kind of lead into who the faller is. And it's going to be weird for me. You know what? No preamble. All right. Your faller is Arthur Smith. And not because I think he did a bad job. Okay. I just like the decision to not start the starters, even for a series, even for a drive. Buddy, you might as well have poured gasoline on Twitter and just set it on fire. Probably saw it last year too. But anyway, very rarely do I see a fan base take preseason games so personal as the Falcons fans base that I interact with. We're very upset that the starters didn't play. But that's by design, you know, of Arthur Smith. You know, he seems to value, and Joe, I wonder if you can speak on this a little bit more insight than what we have, but he seems to value going into the season as healthy as he can be.
I think that's right. I think there is a world in which he would have played the starters for a series, kind of similar to what he did in the previous game. But listening to him in his post game press conference really opened my eyes, because he, you know, reiterated the talking points that he's been making all training camp, saying how physical and intense it's been. And it kind of hit me at that point, when he's talking about the health of the team and everything in relation to that, that the byproduct of having a really intense physical camp is your body actually degrades over the course of time. And why wouldn't you want to take like a couple, you know, basically a couple weeks, the practices, they had one really intense practice that week, but other than that, it was pretty light. They were not in pads on the Wednesday practice leading up to that game. So it was kind of a light week after that last intense practice. And then this week, I think they're going to treat it. It's not really like a bye week that you would have in the middle of a season, but I think they're going to really rest a lot of these guys physically as much as they can before they get into that week one preparation. And so I think he just saw it as, this is the best opportunity to get my team as ready for week one as possible to rest these guys. Now, having said that, I am with a lot of Falcons fans in saying that, like, I just, like, as a football fan, I want to see the best players on the field. Like, Jonathan and I and anybody else who was in the stadium were like, it was almost worse for us because we were like a captive audience there, is trapped in Mercedes-Benz Stadium having to watch it, as opposed to, like, you know, being at home and being able to, like, just flip the channel off. So, you know, for that reason, I would have loved to see the starters play as well. I'm with people on that, but I think it was probably the smart move for the team. And, you know, the byproduct of all of this is that it really does kind of, you know, increase the pressure, I think, on Arthur Smith, especially going into this first game, because, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit of a litmus test as to whether he was proven right or not in his decision to rest all these guys.
Yeah, I mean, well, year one in 21, when he didn't play hardly any starters, and they came out discombobulated and flat as all get out against the Eagles, they looked completely outcoached, outmanned. That doesn't, like fans don't forget that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we can say all day long that winning in the preseason doesn't matter because, like, nobody's going to remember it next year how many games the Baltimore Ravens had won before their preseason streak was snapped. Because nobody could tell, could even told you who held it before the Baltimore Ravens. Yep. So, at the end of the day, all of us fans, especially the ones who are in here listening to people like us, know that preseason doesn't matter in the sense of outcome of the season. But if they come out looking flat in week one against the Panthers, it's going to rub a lot of fan base the wrong way.
Well, you know, I'll say this, like, in the week, you know, after the game against Cincinnati and they start getting into the practices. And then, like, one of the first things I read about the first, like, I think it might be the first practice after that game, was they held out Lindstrom and they held out Dahlman. And they were, like, had a little bit of a nagging whatever. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, if even one of those guys doesn't play, that whole offensive line is not going to play. Mm-hmm. And if that offensive line is not playing, you're not going to put Ridder, your starting quarterback, behind a second-string offensive line, especially against a Steelers defense that, even in their down years, the Steelers defense somehow, some way, always manages to be super mean. They just are. It's just a fact of life. Hopefully one day we can get to that point with the Falcons where it doesn't really matter what year it is. Yeah, we may not be quite as good of a team as we were in some years, but every year, you know, their defense is, you know, and they may give up more points than they did the year before or something like that, but that defense is going to be mean. They're going to get after you, and they're going to make it tough for you all day long. And I'm not going to put my starting quarterback behind a second string offensive line.
Nope.
Yeah.
I wanted to see that offense, but and more importantly, I actually thought maybe they would rest the starters on offense, but and maybe play some of the defense. But when that didn't happen, I was super disappointed by that. But I would much rather be healthy going into it than not. And if you played some guys and then they end up getting hurt, then the double-edged sword is, well, you know, you didn't play anybody else, but you played these guys and then, they got injured and it's a no win scenario.
Yep, I was about to say, it's a damn if you do, damn if you don't. Mm-hmm. Toby, what'd you have?
I mean, we know by now that this is Arthur Smith's MO. You know, one thing I do commend him for is he sticks with what he believes. And I commend him for that. He doesn't deviate from what he believes, no matter what anybody says. And I love that in a coach, because you need to be that type of guy, especially when you're dealing with a fan base like ours that has been used to losing for quite some time now, you know, since after the 2017 season, we haven't really done anything worth crap. So I kudos for him for that. But I'll say this much, there's a lot of pressure. And I said this before the season even started. You're going into your third season playing at home again. You can't afford to drop 0-3 at home and fall flat on your face, in my opinion. Joe, what you think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I totally agree. And I think that's why he's applying pressure on himself by doing what you said, Toby, which is, you know, kind of sticking to his guns and trusting their process. And again, we'll find out if they're proven to be wise in having done so. But you know, I hope you would hope at the very least that at least they've gone through some of those bad experiences where it doesn't hasn't worked out like how they wanted, and they can have that in the memory bank and potentially just do something different in the build up to make sure that the team is a little bit more prepared and ready to go for that first game.
What I will say there, like, and then we'll put, like, use this as kind of like a bow on this Thursday, the last final preseason game. Something you alluded to about the practice intensities, Joe, you could definitely tell the team felt like they didn't have the same intensity, even because all the way up through the preseason, you know, the game in Miami, the twos and threes, like we came on the show after that game talking about, man, if this is what the twos and threes are going to give us, I'm stoked about what the starters are going to give us. And then we get to the Bengals game and you get that from the starters, like on both sides of the ball, mm-hmm. and you continue to get it from the twos and threes. And then we get to the last game and I'm like, all right, cool. Even if like the Steelers are going to start, so what, you know, but it came out and had a different, definitely had a different feel to the intensity on the field. So
one thing I thought that Arthur Smith said that was really interesting was, you know, after the fact to reporters after a practice was that if they feel like they had questions about Desmond Ridder and like in particular, then he would have played. But they consider him like they don't really have the question marks that I think a lot of fans do. And I think it's interesting. Like, fans just naturally have seen a lot less of Desmond Ridder than the coaches have, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like every practice. The coaches are seeing like the TV angles, basically, you know, like they're seeing how it actually looks, as opposed to even reporters who are there at practices during training camp. Like, you guys have a better view than us up on the hill there. you guys see like a lot more of like how the plays are designed and stuff like that, where, you know, we just don't have access to that. And so I think mm-hmm. that's where you start to see a divergence in like what fans want to see in preseason games specifically, and then what the coaches are looking
right.
for.
Fred, we appreciate you. He's kind of like Fred's actually kind of echoing what you're saying here, Joe. He says the starters look good when they did play. I didn't think they needed to play anymore, especially Ridder. I will go, and I've been on record saying, like, I get it and I understand where fans want to see the starters, but also, in my opinion, one series at the beginning of a game isn't going to do much to me. Mm-hmm. Like, in the far as like, process of, hey, we're getting in sync. Now, if there was designs of playing like they used to do, the old third preseason game, you know, used to be the dress rehearsal game, you'd play the whole half, you'd go in, you know, to the locker room, and you'd come back out and play a series or two into the, you know, second half of the game. They don't do that. Nobody does that anymore. Like, so outside of that, I've never really thought that a one or two series would make much of a difference, but I get where people kind of get upset about that. Not upset. That's not the right word. Are
frustrated.
More, like more intense about wanting to see their starters. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, it's like you know, Christmas is almost here. You want to, right. You know, everybody wants that peak. They want to, so if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you've gotten 2 or 3 weeks of Kenny Pickett out there looking great, throwing touchdowns, George Pickens looking great, catching touchdowns. You've right. seen all this. So, like, you've been, you know, that's awesome. Now, if the Steelers do this, because they looked good in the preseason last year, and then they came out, like, I think we talked about this last week, they came out 1-4 to start the season.
Right.
Nobody's going to care how good you look in the preseason. If the Falcons come out and start 4-0 or 3-1 or even 2-2, nobody's going to care that they only played one series in the entire preseason, both offensively and defensively. Nobody's going to care.
Nope.
So at the end of the day, it's everybody's caught in the moment right now, and we'll see how it goes.
By halftime of week one, preseason will be forgotten. We will be mad about something else at that junction.
Yes, but, I hope not a loss.
Yeah, I hope not. Well, I said halftime. Halftime would just be mad about how many times they run the ball or something. I don't know. So while we are here today, mainly not just because it's Tuesday and it's our typical day to stream, but today was cut down day, right? We cut, like, nowadays with the new CBA or what have you. I'm kind of trying to remember exactly when that started. It may have just been in the COVID thing. they went from a couple cut down days to just one day. Like by 4 p.m. today, the team had to be down to its 53 players. So they had to cut 32 players if, you know, not already there. I think the Cardinals cut all 32 of their players today. We had made some other cuts going along, but the vast majority of them came today. So are there any, like, real surprise cuts? Toby, I want to start with you. Was there anybody that when it came across the ticker tape that you said, oh, snap, I can't believe they actually cut him?
No.
Toby said, no, because
this year I saw more clarity with how Falcons were playing, guys. And I think, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, it looks like they put a lot of stock in these joint practices that they've had these last couple of years. And I think you get a kind of a detailed look on how they're going to play guys in the preseason. And that looks like the plan that they followed. So I kind of saw the writing on the wall for some of these guys. So it wasn't really a surprise to me that they got cut based on how they were playing them in these games that they had recently.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and that kind of goes back to my earlier point where it's like, we out of joint practices, we get a highlight cut up put together by the Falcons. Right. They get like basically an entire game's worth of good versus good with all the angles, you know, so that's just, they get a different perspective on that. And they get a lot of really good feedback that they can then evaluate these players. And so I totally agree with you, Toby. That's, I think that those joint practices really can't be overvalued enough by fans in terms of how coaches perceive of them. If I had, you know, in terms of cuts, we'll get to it. I think we're going to talk about Parker Hesse later in the show, so I'll save a lot of what I had to say about that. That was a surprise to me, but it's actually making more sense the more that I think about it. There were some tough cuts on here, but I think the one that surprised me the most was Godwin Igwebike, just because I thought that he was,
I'm glad you said that,
the guy who was, you know, the best kind of reserve ball carrier for them, and they showed last year that they would go to Caleb Huntley, you know, plenty, even though they had a pretty crowded backfield. And I know that Bijan Robinson's in this team now, but Bijan Robinson's going to be lining up in the slot and he's going to be used all over the place. There's still clearly, I think, going to be another back that's not on this roster right now as it currently stands that carries the ball a bunch. It might be Godwin, but he's probably the one to me where I was surprised that they wouldn't just save him a roster spot, and it's specifically the roster spot that was for Javon Gwynn, who I just did not see making this roster at all. Like I didn't see a need to roster Javon Gwynn.
I put Javon Gwynn on the thumbnail for that reason. But yeah. Dre Murphy is agreeing with you. He says, I was also surprised they cut running back. I was calling him GI because there was no way going to attempt to pronounce. You said that last name. Very good. Because I'm horrible with names. So I was kind of surprised. I figured that when Avery Williams went down, and given Goodwin's like experience also being a return man, I thought that he would be a shoe-in in a sense as that fourth running back. But I guess what they decided in that sense was to earmark, you know, obviously Keith Smith as a fourth running back, which is interesting with him being a fullback. Now, this I'm getting this comment a lot, but this was the first one earlier in the show. Is our buddy Chris talking about the only shock for him was Timmy Horn, which is also echoed by, you know, Tony Wright and Eric Mack. It seemed like Timmy Horn, but see, I think Timmy Horn is a guy who you can stash on the practice squad. Like he did good for us. He played well in a spot last year. But theoretically, you don't want to be having Timmy Horn out there for, you know, extended periods of time. So if they need to, you know, call him up because somebody like a Huggins or whatever gets dinged up, I don't think you have much fear of him getting poached off of the practice squad myself. One of the surprise cuts for me, I guess, just because I'm not used to seeing a regime do this, was, and then to Biggs, you know, calls, you know, Toby called the Darren Hall cut. Not that I didn't think Darren Hall's play, you know, kept him on the team, but generally speaking, regimes don't necessarily move off of draft picks as, you know, quickly, especially not a fourth round draft pick. So to see them move off of a fourth round guy, you know, this like before his you know contract's up was kind of interesting. Like, does Joe, did that strike you odd as all? At all,
you know, it is for that reason what you said, that does make it a bit surprising, but it's also for me it wasn't surprising. It's funny, I'm seeing a lot of people being quite surprised at this cut, and to me it was never really in question. And I was talking to a colleague about this earlier today. It's one of those things, like when you're at practice, when you're lucky enough to be a media member at practice, it's not really about like trying to evaluate these players. The coaches have forgotten more football than I'll ever know. Yeah. It's more about who's practicing with who, you know, and and who's in, like who's participating in what units and what groups. And you just never saw Darren Hall really kind of getting off of that second field, playing with a lot of the rookies. He was just kind of never in like the ones or the twos, even really, especially when you had some of these other guys healthy, like Mike Hughes and all them. So I just never really saw him playing a factor into their decisions. And I got to say, if I am going to evaluate some of these players, I just didn't think he was very good last year when he got an opportunity to start when they really needed him to be good. He may have come in and played well initially, but over time he was just started getting exposed more and more. And I think that the coaches probably just saw the writing on the wall there. And you also just don't know how much the fact that there is kind of a new defensive coaching staff in place with, you know, Jerry Gray and Steve Jackson and the secondary, how much, you know, just having new eyes, they just have a different evaluation of a player versus when they were drafted.
Right. Yeah. Before we move.
And we see it here. Where was it at? Friedman here.
I'm glad you. Yeah. That's where I was fixing to move to.
So he's saying the 2021 class is almost half gone now. You got to remember that is also the year where COVID had really like there were some players that didn't play at all the previous year. You're trying to do evaluations on games that didn't happen. On top of that, Terry Fontenot came in after Arthur Smith. So he was kind of late, didn't fully know his scouting staff.
He didn't even have his full scouting staff in. He was having to rely on something Toby had brought up, you know, even the year after, you know, Fontenot was having to rely on, you know, information that was gathered by Dimitrov's staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so, those evaluations. So he was definitely, I give him a lot of pass for that 21, you know, season. If he can come away with if Pitts hits, Graham hits, and Grant hits, and maybe Dahlman, if you get four hits out of a draft class that you end up re-signing, because to me, that's the real marker, is if you re-sign them or not.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's the real mark. So if you re-sign those four guys, then, hey, it's a successful draft, and we won't even remember Darren Hall or Jalen Mayfield. We might remember Mayfield just because, oh, man, that was bad.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add on to something you were saying, and it's something that struck me. Hearing Terry Fontenot talk about a lot of the players that they drafted in this most recent draft, something you would hear him say over and over again is, what is the plan for this player? How are they going to fit into the program or the regime, you know, the whether it's the position unit or whatever? And I just feel like, you know, when they came in, the team was in such flux, it was a lot harder to really identify like a path for some of these players. So I think that also plays into it too.
I think that's a huge thing. Yep. Before we move too far off, Jonathan, you ready for this one? Fred Butts, $55. We appreciate
Mr. Butts again.
Joe, he says, what's your thoughts on Ritter? He thinks now Fred unabashedly thinks that Ritter is going to be a superstar. And as he states here, he takes a lot of crap for it. We don't give him crap for it. We just are in more of, especially me, are in more of like a holding pattern. I want to see how this year plays out. But you, even being up there, have a different perspective, not just from standing on the field and watching the practice, but hearing guys talk in the lot, you know, around the facility and things like that. What is your like opinion of Ritter?
So I wouldn't like say now I know he's going to be a star I think he's going to be good because I think that the Falcons have assembled the talent around him where it's going to be, he would have to be pretty darn bad in order to not be productive in this system. And especially like Arthur Smith doesn't get enough credit for just the play caller that he is and just designing things for quarterbacks to be successful. Even I think it's coming to light now that Marcus Mariota, I mean, maybe it was evident to some people last year, but Marcus Mariota is probably like the worst starting quarterback in the league or one of them. And they still had relative success last year. I mean, if you predicted that team last year to have 7 wins in training camp, I vividly remember this. People would look at you crossway, like,
yeah,
you know, like yeah,
the national media was giving us 2.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 5 was kind of like the upper bound. If you said 5, I was like, oh, okay, so you think they're actually going to do something. And so I think when you take that into perspective, along with the way that this team has been able to really just bolster everything, I think that, you know, Desmond Ridder is set up to succeed. And I think that with the quarterback that he is, he has the intangibles that's going to give him a certain baseline, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to prepare the right way. He's going to be just sharp in those kinds of areas. The one area where I have concerns about him is just his accuracy. And right. Even in that first drive, I think it was like a kind of a perfect illustration of Desmond Ridder and this Falcons offense and what they're going to be capable of this year, while also showing some of their shortcomings. I'm not talking about the penalties, but I'm just talking about, you know, some of the throws that Desmond was making on that drive. Yeah, needed some one-handed catches, which thank goodness you've got Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson who can make those catches, but they're just not like ideally accurate. And if they were ideally accurate, you know, some of those catches are maybe going for 5 or 10 more extra yards, which can be obviously hugely valuable when you're in the thick of a, you know, a tough NFL game. So, but I think there's room to grow in that area for him. I mean, he's still a super young quarterback. And I think that when you just look at his mechanics, I think they have gotten markedly better from where he was last year. Anybody here follows like the QB school who does, you know, JT
O'Sullivan.
He did a breakdown of him last preseason, so I think it's useful for any fan to go watch the one he did last year and then watch the one he did during the Bengals game. But, you know, I think Ritter's going to be a successful quarterback, and I think that that's kind of this whole gambit that the Falcons are making by going to Ridder as their starting quarterback is let's play with a quarterback who's going to be averaging like $3 million salary or less than that, I think, over the course of his rookie contract. It's going to give us so much more room to build up the team around him and be successful. And then maybe we do end up having a really star quarterback that we can sign to a long-term deal who will be here for a long time.
Yeah. You're not investing a ton of money to figure it out. And so that's not a bad way to go about it. Okay, I like this. If this works out, I appreciate you there, Uzi. Type in $5. very
clever.
I like it. Look, hey, you got me to laugh. Like, look, y'all don't have to tip us to get the comments. It's just if you tip us, then that like I'm gonna read that comment if that makes any sense. Days like today, we don't spend as much time in the chat because there are plenty of things to. You know, keep, you know, talking about as we keep pushing and moving. But I will take this comment here. Xavier says, let's keep it bugged. At least the league still believes there's a chance that Ridder falls on his face. He plays for us. They're not going to give him any respect until he earns it. That's Atlanta in general, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the team. That's the city, you know?
Have you guys seen the betting odds on like the Falcons in general, but also like Ridder's, I think his total touchdowns passing and running is like 17 and a half. They're basically predicting that he's going to get benched at some point this
right. season. Which is insane to me how something you brought up earlier, like if you look at, I always tell all of our fans, you know, whoever I talk to, go back and look at 2020 with the Tennessee Titans, you know, Arthur Smith and what he was doing there with Ryan Tannehill. Okay. Then go look at what he did with Matt Ryan and a objectively bad roster. Won 7 games, threw a bunch, got touchdowns, things like that. Then look at how he changed the offense again for Mariota for 13 games, what he was able to. And, like, I just don't understand how you can objectively look at that and go, okay, this staff is better than a lot of people are giving them credit for. As far as being innovative, as far as being, I mean, you brought up the JT O'Sullivan thing. Like, it wasn't just JT O'Sullivan, but Nate Tice also picked up on the, like, variation of mesh that they had come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so I don't want to go like spend too much time on that, but yes, I do think that there's a real good chance that by, you know, midway through the season, the media is singing a different tune. I would imagine people like Nate Tice and Mina Kimes and, you know, some of the other ones who have been a little bit more objective are going to be sitting back going, see, told you so.
Yeah, and it's, and I really liked, you know, what Joe brought up, you know, with how much he's making, and then you're building the roster around him. Worst case scenario is Ritter's not the guy. Okay. If Ritter's not the guy, then whether that's this year, the next guy up is Heinicke. Right. But then if you're in that kind of bad situation next year, then either you're going out and you're getting, you know, if there's a free agent guy out there that you feel like you can get that can do what you need him to do, then you go get him there, or you go and draft another guy, maybe higher up this time, and you take that risk. You take that risk with all your, because you haven't given away your future on any picks already, so you've got plenty of picks to give if you want to move up super high to go get maybe a Caleb Williams or Drake May or somebody like that, and then you drop him into a roster
ready-made
that is already built to go. So you hope that Ritter does it. I think he can. I think this team is built in such a way that Ritter doesn't have to be spectacular. He doesn't even have to be like really good. He just has to be good.
Look, I keep bringing up Kirk Cousins. Minus the choking under the prime time. But, you know, Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill, that's what you really need this to be. All right, now we're going to shift gears here. And Toby, you've been awfully quiet, so I'm going to wind you up and see if I can't get you to.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
I know you are.
No, I'm a team player.
I know you are. I know you're the best. All right, Hesse is gone.
Yep.
Hurts my feelings a little bit. Toby, talk me off the ledge. Tell me it's going to be okay. Why? What happened? Why is my guy gone?
Look, man, I knew it from the outset when Fitzpatrick, when he took over, I knew that it was going to be the end of Hesse. Okay, I just saw that writing on the wall. And then what really gave me the writing on the wall is when that spectacular catch in the practice where Desmond Ritter said, they too effing small. You know who made that catch in the end zone, right? So, I mean, you saw a lot more dynamic from John, right? You saw it was just something different about him once he finally got healthy. He wasn't really healthy last year. He got healthy this year. It was always more than likely the plan. And if he probably had been healthy last year, in my opinion, Hesse probably would have been cut. Now, I'll say this much. Thank you for Hesse, okay? Because when we had a putrid roster, right, we needed guys like him in 2021 to come in and help us just to build a roster, because man, I mean, a lot of the players they had in 2021, it was amazing that we won 7 games that year with the type of roster we had. So just to have that guy on the team, man, I appreciate everything he has done for us up to this point. But for me, I just feel like the writing was on the wall when I saw John play. And I think he's going to be amazing for the Atlanta Falcons this year, in my opinion, especially in the red zone. And you get that 13 personnel where you have 3 tight ends on the field, and you know Kyle Pitts being one of them. You got all these tall guys on the field and the 13 personnel down there in the red zone. It can be dangerous for any safety out there, linebacker out there. And we saw that in the Miami practice.
Right. Joe, you like during like the lead up, you said you were gonna hold your peace, so
yeah,
like rip the lid off. Well, let's roll.
It's just tough to lose a guy who, you know, is like the, you know, foundational piece of what Arthur Smith was doing in his offense last year. Right? I think Parker Hesse played more snaps than anybody that wasn't an offensive lineman.
Yes,
I believe,
and that's what had me like. Honestly, I'm not even gonna lie. I figured, hey, we can cut Keith Smith and keep Parker Hesse. Was my thought, because there were plenty of times that Hesse was lead blocker on run plays, you know, the cog that made it go. And obviously, this is the initial 53. You know, Tony Wright's talking about, you know, Parker Hesse may get reclaimed on the practice squad, and they can call him up if need be. I don't think people are out there clamoring for a Parker Hesse, but
And I think that is exactly why he was the one who ended up getting cut here, because Toby's right. When you look at John Fitzpatrick and just his characteristics as a tight end, that's more of what NFL teams are just generally looking for out of that position. A 6'7" guy who can catch the ball and is a strong blocker. And not as like Parker Hesse really has way more value for the Falcons just because he knows the offense in and out.
Yeah.
And can do these things that Arthur Smith wants to do, especially pre-snap with all the motions. So for that reason, he has more value for the Falcons than pretty much any other team. And there's not really a huge reason for some other team to go out and claim a guy like Parker Hesse, because another team probably has their own Parker Hesse, somebody who can, you know, knows their offense and can do everything. So there's not really these like unique traits or characteristics that Parker Hesse has. He's just a smart player who can put his put his body on the line and do a good job of it in terms of
right.
Let's remember he's a converted defensive lineman, so it's not like he's like especially gifted at the position necessarily, but you know, I do think that he will be back on the practice squad. Certainly wouldn't be surprised at all to see him elevated quite a bit on and make game day rosters if there's a tight end that does get injured or something like that. And I honestly think the Falcons may still have him like in their long-term plans to kind of be the Keith Smith successor. Like, I think that they see Parker Hesse as being able to do Keith Smith's job probably better than any of the other fullbacks that they had in camp when you look at Clint Rakovich or Tucker Fisk or anybody like that. So I don't think it's the end of the line necessarily at all for Parker Hesse and the Falcons, but I am just surprised he got cut because of just how much he was used last year, frankly.
Yeah,
Rakovich, real quick, I didn't know anybody was even looking at this, but apparently Rakovich was like the number one rated fullback in all of preseason.
I heard that too. Yeah.
Make no sense to me, but that's PFF for you, making you scratch your head. But no, with Hesse, I remember last offseason, I was like, they moved the way they were moving him around. If I was like, if they don't throw him the ball, ain't nobody going to respect that. Little did I know, he was just a sledgehammer that was just going to run, but to Toby's point earlier, him playing deep in the preseason games, like in the second half of games, like I started that because I was like, he's out there when, a guy like Michael Pruitt wasn't out there, or obviously a Janu Smith wasn't out there. And at times, even a, John Fitzpatrick wasn't out there, because after like John Fitzpatrick made about two or three catches, like those, I'm going to turn around and catch it like this up the seam, type deal, that when they tried those same plays with Hesse wasn't really making those plays.
Yeah.
Hesse
needs his feet firmly planted on the ground in order to catch a
like John Fitzpatrick actually showed a lot more body control and catching ability than he was reported to have coming out of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Like when we drafted him before he got injured, we're like, oh, this is the, Lee Smith replacement, the blocking tight end.
Yeah.
The extra lineman. Mm-hmm.
Really
quickly, it's funny because I've talked to D-Led about this and, we both kind of thought that when they put him on IR last year, the goal was probably going to be for him to get pretty big and really kind of be that kind of blocking tight end. And we were kind of surprised, like next time we saw him, he was like trim and looking like more like a receiving tight end, which I thought it was interesting at the time. And now it's making a lot of sense. He's showing his talents in that.
Oh yeah. Toby.
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned seam route, right? Because last year was the first time I saw them run a seam route with Michael Pruitt. Okay. Down the middle. We hadn't seen a seam route since Arthur Smith has been here out of these tight ends, not even with Kyle Pitts in his first year. So when I saw that and Desmond Ridder hit Michael Pruitt, I said, you know what? They're going to want more tight ends to do that now that Desmond Ridder can hit that seam route, right? Because you didn't see that with Marcus Mariota the whole season. You didn't see no seam routes ran down the middle at all. And all of a sudden, you got Desmond Ridder comes in there, and I mean, it was so beautiful against Tampa Bay, man. I got up out of my seat. I'm like, whoa, seam route. Like, it just really, it just made me excited. I'm sorry. It just made me excited. And so when I saw John Fitzpatrick do what he did in that end zone in that practice against Miami, and you had Desmond Ridder just blowing up all the corners and safety, they too effing small. I just loved that when he said that. And you just got a guy like John Fitzpatrick, 6'7", man. I mean, look. like I said, I love Parker Hesse. I give him much appreciation because, man, when we were trying to build that roster and he came in here and helped us from the ground up, all respect to him. And I hope if he doesn't find a team with the Falcons, if we don't bring him back on the practice squad, but I'm like Joe, I do believe they will bring him back on the practice squad because of his value that he brings to the Atlanta Falcons, especially on the scout team units that you will be able to use him on and could possibly take over for Keith Smith. But, I mean, it's a John world now, and you're watching, you're just seeing a sample size of what he could possibly do on the field this year. He could be a lot more than just a blocking tight end, in my opinion.
And also, like, something that we haven't really brought up here much is your 13 personnel, at least early on in the season, is Pitts, it's Janu Smith, and it's Michael Pruitt.
Yeah.
Right? And Pruitt, you know, is not as – I don't think he's as fluid as Hesse as far as, like, the blocks, but he can still give you some of that H-back stuff from a different position. Maybe not moving all the way across the formation that, you know, Hesse was giving you, but if you start him like you got Ritter in the pistol, you know, Pruitt on the beside him with a back behind him in that type of a, you know, formation, you can get – Pruitt as a lead blocker, and also the rapport that Pruitt had developed with Ritter last year. Yeah. It makes sense why he was, you know, chosen as that, what I'm going to call your tight end three. Joe, is it rain getting rough over there? Was that
God is opening the skies over here. So hopefully we survive. If I drop out, then I either have just lost my internet power, or I don't know, maybe lightning is literally struck me.
I saw a flash in your window. Yeah, I was like, serious over there.
One of the reasons I was surprised about Hesse too is because I think it was, I can't remember if it was the Dolphins game or the Bengals game. But Hesse was playing late into the game, was surprising to me just because of how important he's been with the how much he's been used last year. And I asked Arthur Smith, I was like, you know, Hesse playing late, like, and he kind of shut down real quick. Was like, yeah, you know, we just didn't have guys out there. We needed players to play later because of, you know, whatever. And, you know, Ebi Katie was playing late into some of those games too. But the way he answered that question just made me think, like, yeah, no, we're still going to use him. We just need him out there, and that's how important he is to our offense because we need somebody out there to do what he can do. So that's just another reason why I was surprised about Hesse. But yeah,
like Ghost Pepper puts it, because I think Hesse will be on speed dial as long as he remains a free agent. Okay. But Fitz earns a spot for now, and I think,
I mean, this it's no different. It's kind of in the same boat as, like, you bring in two or three kickers into camp. You end up picking one, whether it's the guy you had the year before or not. And then the other two guys, if they did well enough, then you just let them know, like, hey, you know, if we need you, you know, we'll give you a call. We're going to hold on to your number and all this other stuff. So, like, Hesse knows, like, if the Falcons are in need of another tight end, like, he's going to be high up on that list of people to call first in the case of emergency.
Mm-hmm. Coach K.
Coach K.
I think he's going to kick off. He's going to go ahead and kick off our Q&A segment. He says, do y'all see us making one or two more pickups before week one? If so, who do you think would be good pickups? Joe, I want to start with you on that one.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt there will be one or two pickups. I think you're probably looking at a swing tackle still. Joshua Miles made the roster, but TBD on how that works out. I think that's clearly an area where the Falcons will be looking to upgrade. And part of this comes down to who they decide to put on IR. I think I can safely say that, like, it's not a matter of if players will go on IR, but just who they will be
and when.
Yeah, exactly. So if one of those players is Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, who could potentially go on IR, just mainly as a stash, just so you can kind of keep him healthy later into the year. Then Godwin could be a guy who's back and signed to the practice squad and then elevated, something like that. I do think they will make one. There was also a good returner that was waived today that could potentially interest the Falcons. You know, because D. Alford, while he did have that amazing, what's that?
It was the guy from the Bengals, right?
Yeah, the Bengals guy. I forget his name. But, you know, D. Alford, he obviously had the great punt return for a touchdown this year, but he hasn't been doing it that long. And I think that for a punt returner, the one thing that I think Maurice Williams, the special teams coach, would tell you that he wants is somebody who he can just knows is going to catch the ball. And frankly, when you haven't had a guy who's been doing it for very long, I think that's kind of lingering in your mind that, you know, can you do the fundamental things?
Yeah. Any, like, you talk about IR and you bring up Cordell Patterson. Is there anybody else, like, because William Amy's bringing up, like, Mike Hughes didn't show me nothing during the preseason or training camp, but he kind of got, like, he's been down for a couple weeks now.
Yeah. And I have not heard any a peep about him. So he is definitely one that I'm looking at to be going on IR, especially when you saw the news today of the team flying in Malcolm Butler to work out. Yeah. To me, that is a let's fill the Mike Hughes gap, because I don't think it's going to be Jeff Okuda. I said this on 92.9 The Game yesterday on a radio hit that I think was making the rounds on Twitter. But, you know, I saw Jeff Okuda. I don't think I was supposed to see him, but he was walking out of the bathroom as we were leaving the indoor facility, and he was all sweaty and had his helmet with him. He wasn't practicing with the team, to be clear, that day, but he might have been, you know, working out outside with a trainer or something. So that was weird. I was like, oh, okay. So he's at least in a nice lather. So that means he's got to be, you know, at least so far along. And so I would think that he's going to be. Yeah. So I would think he's at least kind of in contention to play in week one. And that would line up with kind of the timeline that Arthur Smith was giving. So I don't think that, I know that that was kind of an initial reaction to seeing that Butler news was that it was going to be for Okuda, but I don't think that that's going to be the case. Just in case, hopefully that can kind of calm some people's nerves.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Okuda, I think because we have heard from Arthur Smith, he still feels good about early season. Now, what he considered early season, week one to week four would be my guess. So, and I'll say this, like the fact that we didn't keep either Carlos Washington or Igwebuke, so right now the true running backs, the only true running backs we have on the field are Algier, Robinson, and Patterson. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So that makes me think that Patterson is going to be there probably week one. Mm-hmm. So I don't see him going to IR. I don't see Okuda going to IR. Mike Hughes, like you said, we kind of heard, oh, he's out of practice and he's dealing with stuff. And then we kind of haven't heard anything else. We haven't heard anything. So I can see him. But yeah, you're going to see more moves. This is not the final 53-man roster. It's not going to be the final 53-man roster come week three or four or five. Like, there's going to be moves that are made.
Yeah, that's been Smith's MO since he's been here, him and Fonda. All right, Willie Doc's got a question for us, and I'm going to let Toby lead this one off. Willie says, are you surprised Scotty Miller made it? Toby?
No. I mean, you know, I said that I would feel comfortable if they did cut him. It wasn't going to bother me none. But they have a plan for Scotty Miller. And I think we just haven't really been able to see it in true fruition yet, because he didn't kind of show us what many fans would have liked to have seen. But the guy was getting open a lot. I mean, he was getting open quite a bit. And I mean, if Heineke hits him well on that fade route into the end zone, I mean, that's a beautiful thrown play. And he beat his guy clearly. So I'm not surprised that he didn't get cut and he's still on the team, because, and especially since they barely even played him after that, you know, that kind of, like I told you, they kind of gave us clarity on the guys that they felt comfortable already that was going to make this roster, as opposed to the guys that weren't. Well, that's why I wasn't too surprised.
Like, I got off that high horse, so to speak, after, like, he didn't come back in the Bengals game, and then he didn't play at all in the Steelers game. So that told me all I needed to know right there. They have a higher opinion of Scotty Miller than I do at this point, which hopefully it turns into like a Cordell Patterson situation. When he's something like, I will gladly state it all over the place that when we signed Cordell Patterson, you know, Toby, remember, I wrote that off almost instantly. like this guy wasn't going to be nothing other than a, you know, returner. And, you know, okay, we're planning on doing a lot of returning, I guess. But then he comes in and proves me completely wrong. So
I just think for a Scotty Miller situation, every time we've seen him to this point, maybe with the exception of like one or two plays, by and large, it's been with the twos and threes. And when he's on the field with the twos and threes, he's the man.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like he is the top ranked guy. And so guys are going to focus on him. But even then, he's flat out beat the guys that he's been around. It's just we haven't quite connected with him yet.
Right.
So I'll tell you this. The other reason why I know I felt like Scotty was going to make it. Think about Adam Humphries, right? What he was to the Titans when he was playing with Arthur Smith. He kind of reminds you of Adam Humphries in this offense, right? And the things that he can do, especially on crossing routes, whip routes and stuff like that. Some of the stuff that Adam Humphries did similarly in Arthur Smith offense. So I think the plan for having somebody like a Scotty Miller, because now Arthur Smith can kind of get back to the way his offenses were with the type of personnel he now has, as opposed to what he had a couple of years ago. He can now run his offense, and Scotty Miller plays a huge role in that if he fits into that Adam Humphries role, in my opinion, from what I watched of Adam Humphries when he was playing with them, when he was calling the offense.
Like thinking about, like I said, I tell anybody, if you're bored in the next 2 weeks, go back and watch 2020 Tennessee Titans, because that's what I think we're pushing more towards. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of balance, that kind of explosion, that kind of efficiency. That's what I think we're pushing for. Holy crap, we got a celebrity in the house.
Oh, Matt Ryan.
I'm sorry, Matt. I think like you got like an amazing place on the wall here. Forever in my heart, but I think you know you just need to chill out up in the CBS booth. And
I just want to say, like, why would you want to come back and get your head busted when you did a great job with CBS in the booth? Right. That seems like the career path to go now.
There it is. That's what I'm talking about. Well, but we do appreciate you dropping in and making a comment. Brian Peeble says, "What's up, fellas? What's going on,
man? What up?
Appreciate y'all being here." King Seven says, "Oh, heck no." Man, you got to get props for props too, King. Me and King used to go back and forth about Matt Ryan. So, anyway, so let's see. Trying to think. Okay, Tony brings up like we briefly touched on them bringing in Malcolm Butler, supposedly tomorrow for a workout. But they had Bradley Roby got let go by the Saints. And Joe, if you had to choose, are you taking a 33-year-old Butler, or I don't know exactly how old Roby is, but I know Roby's a little bit younger.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I would definitely take Bradley Roby. I mean, that would be my preference. I mean, Malcolm Butler has not played since 2020, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, so he's been bringing out of the game.
Coach, like being an assistant.
Right. Yeah, maybe that may be more important.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, really? That's the guy.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's like one of those things where I think it gets a lot of people feeling the type of way, because he was, had such a big, kind of a Super Bowl legend or whatever. But he's not really doing anything for me personally.
No.
I thought he was going to be younger. Bradley Roby's 31, so he's only like a couple of years younger. But now the difference is he's been playing the last couple of seasons.
Fred Butts, we appreciate you again. He's talking about what's up, man. Okay, I guess this is kind of close to the time where we should be, by all accounts, doing record predictions. What I think my record prediction, he asked, what's our record prediction? He'll say 12-5. I say you have a winning season. And that means you're going to have at least 9 wins. I think you're going to have a winning season, and I think you have a real good chance to secure the NFC South. Joe, what do you think?
I'm putting it at 11 wins right now. I think the team is good. I think the team is really good. And I think that they're just being so dramatically underplayed in the media. And I think about media a lot. I want to say, like, I don't think there's much incentive at all for most national media to say the Falcons are going to be a great team this year, or be good, or exceed all these expectations. It might be different if it was, if we were in like a massive media market like New York or Los Angeles or something like that. Then maybe there would be that incentive to say, oh, this team's going to like really, break out of the pack and be a good team. But we see this happen a lot, where teams just kind of come on, they come on, they kind of burst onto the scene. And that's kind of how I feel the Falcons are going to be this year. They just had the deck stacked against them so much these last couple of years, and especially last year. And I'm telling you, like, last year gives me so much optimism going into this season. Even like people say, oh, they've had two back-to-back 7-win seasons. Last year's 7-win season was remarkable. And the stat that I love, my favorite one, is the Falcons there were 15 games where they either won or lost by one score. There were only two teams in the NFL that were better than them. You guys know it.
Yeah, KC was one, and was the Bengals the other one?
Buffalo.
I knew it was the Bills. Yeah.
The Bills and the Chiefs were the only. The Bills had 16 games and the Chiefs 17. Now, granted, there were a lot of other teams, like over more than five or six, that were tied with the Falcons, but still, like, they were competitive, and they frankly should have won a couple more of those games than they did. Obviously, that first one against the Saints is one that still, I think, is stuck in everybody's craw. So,
well, that and the second one against Carolina, up in Carolina.
Yep.
You should have won that game.
Yep.
I mean,
you should have won the second Saints game.
Yep.
Like, we were on our way to win that game, and then Drake fumbles the ball.
Drake fumble. Yep.
I think the biggest thing that sticks out in my head, especially about last season, was you only got blown out in one game, and that was the Bengals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Bengals was the only time you stepped on the field last year and you looked outmatched and outplayed.
And even that Bengals game, that was a game where AJ Terrell was out of the game. They dressed him for the game, and he was out of it after like the third play.
Yep.
You know,
and you had Cornell Armstrong.
They were so shorthanded in the secondary, which is that's the last team you want to be shorthanded in the secondary.
Yes. No, T. Higgins, Bengals, and Jamar Chase,
with Joe Burrow. Yeah. Oh, that was brutal. he could go to Chase whenever he wanted to in that game. Frankly, the score could have been worse if they wanted it to be. But yeah, other than that one, I mean, they're competitive in all these games. And I just think that from a media angle, like, if you're just kind of like a talking head on like an ESPN or something, you just don't have that much incentive to say like, oh, the Falcons are going to break out. I think if you look at like the football people at the Athletic, or, you know, Mina Kimes or whoever, these people who look at the game a lot more just objectively, they really do like what the Falcons are doing. The Athletic Football Show ranked the Falcons offense that they predicted to be like, I think the fifth best offense in the NFL. And that's with Desmond Ridder, who they all kind of agree is a question mark. But I mean, I think this Falcons team is going to be a lot better, have a lot better record than people are going to give them credit for right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, exactly what you were talking about. Like, if we were a big market team, I mean, how many years, granted, last few years they've been better, but like, how many years, every single, like, the lead up to every single season, did we hear this is the year for the Cowboys? This, and then they'd fall on their faces, and then the next year, there didn't matter what they did, it was always, this is the year. Are they going to be able to take the East? Absolutely, this is the year. And then they couldn't do it. But that was because you're, you know, the Dallas Cowboys. But with the Falcons, it's they don't have to think about it. Like, that's less.
Exactly. They
don't have to prepare for it. They don't have to go look at anything, because they can say it, and most people out there that listen to them aren't going to think one way or the other on it. They're just going to like, oh, the Falcons. I know. I've heard that they're a bad team. Yes, I expect them to be a bad team. Mm-hmm. And but on top of that, it sets them up. You know, whether they're doing it consciously or not, it sets them up that if the Falcons do, then all of a sudden now that's an easy story to write now.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly. Nobody was talking about it before the season. Now you're halfway through the season. They've only lost, like, let's just say they've only lost a couple games. Maybe they had a really hot start to the season, whatever. And they're like, Falcons just came out of nowhere. Everybody was expecting this. And that just makes it easy for them later on.
Totally.
So, John, what's your score prediction?
I think I'm in the same camp with Joe. I think 11 wins is about. I could see us. I think the floor is probably 10.
I got you.
For us. I think the ceiling is probably in the 12. I think 12 or 13 is probably the absolute max. I think if we play at bare minimum, if we play with the same kind of competitiveness that we did last year, the talent, the upgrade in talent, will push us over the hump on at least two or three more games. And then, you know, if you just do that kind of math, that's at least 10 right there. And then I think we can pull out another one somewhere along the way. So I'd say, 11 and 6.
There you go.
And you're in the mix for the NFC South.
Toby, I know you're normal, like going to the Super Bowl. You still with that?
Yeah, I still believe it. even with 10 wins, because I do believe that they could catch fire like Green Bay did in 2010. Green Bay only went 10-6, you see. So I believe that they can go 10-7. And the only reason I'm saying 10-7 is because Arthur Smith hadn't shown me yet they could put together a string of wins. We've seen Arthur Smith, they win one game here, they win two games here. But he hasn't shown me yet that they can win three or four games in a row. And so this is the only reason I'm going 10-7, to give them that room to be able to still do what he's been doing, where they try to put wins together. And they put enough together to get 10 wins. Now, if he shows me more, then cool. Yeah, they still could be, to me, 11 or 12 wins. But until then, I have to go 10-7 only because of that trend right there that Arthur Smith has shown me.
Right. Well, we got our boys over. Yadi Falcon.
Oh, snap.
What up, John?
He says, he's got faith in the defense. Took him in his fantasy team. Let's go.
That's bold.
When's the last time the Falcons were on somebody's fantasy roster?
the defense.
Yeah, the Falcons defense. I'm
playing in, I think it's a church league again this year if we can get enough folks. And I went ahead and named my team Ritter Me This. So I think a lot of people are taking Ritter as my QB. And I thought about naming my other one Ritter Through It. So.
Nice. The other thing about when we're talking about these record prediction is the schedule sets up so good for the Falcons. Like it really could not be better. They got to choose their bye week because of the whole London thing. So they got an ideal bye week. And then if you just look at the way the season starts, it's like they play a rookie quarterback in his first NFL game. Then they play Jordan Love, his second start in his NFL game. And then they play CJ Stroud early in the season as well. The Commanders early in the season as well. So they've got a lot of like favorable, not just the teams they're playing and how talented they might be, but where they fall in the schedule too is, I think it's ideal, honestly.
Yeah, I think so. I think the schedule sets up nicely, as long as, you know, we gel quickly enough on, you know, the defensive side of the ball. somebody got me says Ritter Me This is the name of my fantasy team. Great minds there, Michael B.
Exactly.
As much crap as Ritter's gotten, I had to. But the schedule, you know, sets up quite nicely for a good run. Hopefully, for the first time in a while, like as Toby's saying, let's see if we can string together, some good consecutive football games.
I want to get to 4-0 because I want to see John and Mike with mustaches.
Oh yes, that would be great. Yes, for any of y'all that don't know who do or don't follow the Out of Your Falcon Mind, if you don't, you really should because they're a hoot. But if we go 4-0, both of those guys are going to shave their beards and just have mustaches.
Oh, snap. Yep. Let's go, baby. Let's get that 4-0, baby. Let's
go. Tabig says he's got him going 14-3 with only three losses being to the Vikings, the Jets, and Jacksonville. That's interesting.
Let's go.
I would like the thing that I want to do more than anything this year is I want to win the division if we can. And then I want to beat the Saints twice and the Panthers twice.
Right.
I really want to beat the Saints twice. With Derek Carr, cause like you go onto their forums, you talk to their, you see what their fans are talking about. They're thinking Super Bowl or bust. And I'm just like, I don't see it,
but hey, whatever. Right. Willie Doc, we appreciate you.
Willie Doc.
Willie.
He asks, what is the weakest position on the team as of today? Mm. As of today, Joe, you're our guest.
I've said it all preseason training camp, so I got to stick with it. And I hate to say that it's like weak. I like to refer to it as volatile, potentially like you don't really know. You don't really know what you're going to get, but I think it's the linebacker position. Now, I think Caden Ellis is very good. I think he's going to be – I've gotten actually no doubts about Caden Ellis. I think that, you know, a guy who knows the defensive system obviously is really important to come in and be the guy who can communicate and all these things. But I really think, you know, I like look at Troy Andersen. Like, I think that early last year he struggled, and I think the reasons for that are pretty obvious. You know, he's a very inexperienced in the position. And then when you're just taking the step up to play in the NFL, like, that is just, it's almost crazy to think that he's even capable of doing what he did last year, just being in that position. But he's going to have to be better than he was last year. Now, I do tend to think that he will be, but I think that there's every possibility that he won't be as good as they need him to be in certain things, especially stopping the run. Now, hopefully that defensive line, that beefed up defensive line, will help him in that respect. But it's the one thing where I'm like, I need to see him make plays. And also in coverage too. I thought, you know, there were times where he was exposed there. So I think for me, that's still the one position group that kind of stands out.
Toby, what do you think?
I mean, I would have to echo the same as Joe just said about the linebacker group. I'm curious to see how they scheme all the guys, like, you know, Ebiketie and Malone, and how they mix them in with the guys that they have. Now, I know they're not straight up linebackers like, you know, Caden Ellis and Troy Andersen and Landman or Nate Landman, but I'm just curious to see how they're looking at their schemes this year with the linebackers that they have on this team, because it's obviously got to be something schematically that they're looking at, the reason why they chose the linebackers that they have, and they figure they can do something scheme-wise to make the group a lot more stronger than what we're looking at on paper. Because I have to agree that right now it would be the linebacker group until I see what they're going to do schematically with these guys that make them look stronger than what they look on paper right now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Jonathan, you got anything different than the linebackers?
Not really. I mean, I do think that before training camp started and before some of the preseason games, I was feeling worse about the linebacking core than I do today.
I would agree with that, man.
We saw Ellis in the one series.
Right.
He looked spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You really see the difference between him and Troy Andersen. Specifically, in that one drive, and specifically, like, I think it was the very first play of the game
for
the
defense, exactly talking about.
Where he knifes through, because he saw that hole and immediately shot that gap. And Troy Andersen, now granted, Troy Andersen, his gap responsibility was farther to the outside, and that's where he was, but you could see the twitch, like, just the processing. Mm-hmm. Happened a lot quicker for him than it did Troy. And so he was just a bit in ahead of Troy and getting going to where he wanted to be. So like, I really like him, and I'll tell you what, like, I really want Troy Andersen to work out, because just physically, you know, like, athletically, this guy is super crazy good. And if he can ever get it going here and can match it with his athleticism, freak of nature kind of deal. But I really liked what I saw out of Nate Landman in the preseason and in training camp. Like, yeah. I really liked what I saw out of him, both from a coverage standpoint and from a run stuffing standpoint. I think he showed out a lot better in this in his second year here than he did in his first year. And so having him, and Tay Davis is a guy that's strictly like special teams, but also like a good run defender. He's not a guy you want out there in coverage, or not out back in coverage. You want him up close to that line of scrimmage. But at the end of the day, like, seeing what those two guys had, seeing Caden Ellis, the major question mark is Troy Andersen and whether or not he can put it together. I'm not expecting him to be that way day one or week one. What I want to see is, can he get there by the end of the season?
Yeah,
and can he preferably closer to the beginning of the season than closer to the end of the season. But can he progress as this season goes along and get better and better and better? And as long as I see that from him, then I'm going to be fine.
I kind of agree with all y'all's points on. I'm not as concerned as I was, just because the depth looks a little better than I initially thought. But The one that still kind of concerns me, and I'm going to kind of piggyback off of Tabigs here, not necessarily the center position, but I'm going to like couch us all in the backup, the line depth is the part that concerns me at this junction, because like with the, I didn't expect any of them to successfully block TJ Watt, but that first play didn't nobody block nobody. It's like they, it's like
the quarterback,
right? It was like the offensive line and the defensive line just like switched positions on the field. So, yeah, so my concern right now is the depth at line. If one of the starters go down, a little concern with the, you know, Lindstrom, Dahlman, but that just seems like that was more of a let's just make sure they're healthy kind of deal.
Yeah.
Than anything major, at least at this point. But that's my only real concern there, because like Justin Schaefer obviously got cut, didn't look great in as depth on any of the guard positions. Hennessy's on IR. Ryan Neuzel looked good with his time at center, but there were still times that he got overwhelmed. Bravel looked overmatched like the whole Steelers game, even when their backups got in. So that's my concern there, is if the, you know, backups have to play extended periods. I mean,
I will say this about Dahlman. You know, there's a lot of criticism of him, and certainly I had criticisms of him last year as well, especially like the snapping. Like the snapping is right. The one thing that's like, it's so evident. It's clear as day to everybody who's watching the game how much that's throwing off the offense when you can't get the snaps, you know, done correctly, the shotgun snaps. But I will say, you know, this team, I think they ran more outside zone than any team in the NFL last year. And he is so good at getting to the second level and making impactful blocks that allow for what might be 5 yard gains to become 25 yard gains, because he is cutting off that backside linebacker. And it's just an unbelievable athletic gift that he's able to do that. And if you look at him compared to so many centers around the league, he looks like thin. He looks like a tight end almost compared to some of these guys. I mean, he is like, he's an athletic center. And so they're looking for something very specific in that position that he's able to do. And that's why you see, despite the snaps, that frustrated all of us last year, that's why you see this coaching staff really kind of going back, you know, just backing him time and time again, because they know what he does when he's on it.
Oh yeah.
Well, I talked about this. I remember when it was right after the season, we were talking about potential free agents and who we were going to look at, you know, well before any of this actually took place. When the talk came up with some free agents, some people were talking about like, who are some centers we could go get, you know, veteran proven guys and all this other stuff. And I said way back then, I was like, I'm telling you right now, like in like kind of the post, like it was one of the press conferences not long after the season, and Arthur Smith came out and specifically name called Drew Dahlman as a guy that they really liked because of how he started the season and how he progressed and learned and got better, and you know, the difference between who he was at the beginning of the season versus the end of the season. And I said, that is going to be your starting quarterback next year, because for one, or starting center next year.
Well, same, that's a hell of a jump there, John.
He's a multifaceted man. Okay.
Yeah, man.
But I said that's going to be your starting center for two reasons. One, they like what they saw. He's a developing guy, and Ledford is obviously a guy that they trust to actually bring guys along. Right. Yep. And if a guy doesn't come along, it's not because Ledford, it's because everybody else is doing it. Everybody else is able to progress and get better. But if you're not able to, like a Mayfield, then it's on you, because we see the results with other folks who are getting the same training you are. Mm-hmm. You know, so I saw Dahlman as the starter even before we ever got into free agency. And I think he's going to be better. Are there going to be some bad snaps from time to time? Probably. But at the end of the day, this guy is, he's got a really good rapport with Ritter. They were able to get that going really quickly. And I just think that Dahlman is going to be, I think he's going to probably be a surprise guy for a lot of people who just still don't know who he is, that he's going to be part of hopefully what we believe to be one of the better O-lines in the NFL this year.
We'll see. Well, gentlemen, the thunder is starting to roll around my house as well.
I knew it was coming for you guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. And we appreciate everybody who joined us tonight. And we definitely appreciate Joe Patrick taking time
absolutely
out of your night.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Tell folks what
it was good. I was so happy when he told me this earlier. I know, but when he told me this yesterday, I believe it was yesterday when he said that you were coming on, I was like, hell yeah, that's awesome. It was a pleasure to meet you, man.
I just heard you on Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. So when he said something about that, I was like, wow, okay, let's go, baby. Let's do it.
Willie Doc says that's the Bijan Robinson thunder that we're
hearing.
Right.
There you go.
But tell folks where they can find you and where they can listen to you, because you do more than just American football.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at JAPatrick200, and that's my handle there. So you can catch me there. Or Twix, as I see. I think Mike Rothstein started that. I see got that going, which I like. That's pretty funny. It's the one funny thing that Mike Rothstein has said.
There you go.
By the way, he's the one who started the Scotty Miller bandwagon, the Scotty Miller off the team thing. I think he was early on that too. I blame him. I'm of course just giving him grief. He's a friend of mine. But so I run the Dirty South Soccer, which if you're into Atlanta United, we cover Atlanta United. So they're looking good right now. So you can follow Dirty South Soccer as well. But make sure you follow at 929 the game. I'll be on the pregame to the pregame show this year. It's called the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. So you can catch me on 929 the game every morning on your way to Mercedes-Benz Stadium before the games.
Perfect. That is awesome. As always, y'all can follow me on Twitter and or Twix at Grimm1128. That's GRIMM1128. Toby.
TobyD1991.
Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
That's right. Hey, folks, keep an eye on the channel. We'll have something for the weekend, and then we'll be back on Tuesday with another live show. They're not playing. My week's jacked up. We're not playing this Sunday. We're playing next Sunday.
Yes.
All right, cool. Yeah. Because, see, Brian messed me up. He said, rise up. It's for real next Tuesday. No, it's not. Anyway. So, all right. Appreciate y'all. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.
Rise up.
Rise up. And...